now, say now. You're tuned into the Wake Up and Win podcast, and I am your host, Devon Pouncey. I am here in the beautiful city of Portland, Oregon, at the Momentum Studios by my lonesome, no Spencer Shay. Zeb is behind the controls. What up, Zeb?
What's up, man?
There we go. My guy Zeb is here. We rocking and rolling today. Zeb, I might chime you in from time to time. As a matter of fact, have you been following this Drake and Kendrick stuff?
I haven't been listening super closely, but I definitely heard the song this morning when it came out.
Got it. That's all that matters. So when we get to that, I definitely want to get your take on it. But before we get to any content today, and that'll be a little bit later on in the episode here, I do want to start with win shares because I have got a loaded week of DJing coming up this week, and I'm not mad about it. Starting on Thursday night, you can catch me, as this will be released today early. This will be released on Wednesday this week. But Thursday, you can catch me from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. for Mimosa Wine Night, Northwest 23rd. Great vibes. Always a good time. I'm there every week on Thursdays. You can even join the Mimosa Wine Club. For those of you that don't know, Mimosa is a restaurant, but it started off and its foundation was being a wine, in fact. And they basically, you know, launched their wine company, and now they've got a brick and mortar where they sell their bottles of wine while also selling food and operating as a restaurant as well. Really good vibes, black owned, love that. And it feels that way when you're in there. Like, there's a certain vibe that you get when you're in a lot of black owned environments and amongst, you know, black folks that understands black culture. And this is a place that gets it to the fullest. And I enjoy being there all the time. And then I'll be back there on Saturday for Saturday brunch. I'll tell you about the rest of Thursday night and Friday shortly, but just sticking with Mimosa, I'll be back there Saturday for brunch as well from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. But Thursday, after I leave Mimosa, I'll be going to Lulu for Lulu Thursday. It'll be my first time ever spending at Lulu on a Thursday. Lulu Thursday has been a staple in the nightlife community around here in the city of Portland. It's very popular amongst the city. It's also First Thursdays this week, so a lot of people will be outside already going to First Thursdays. After First Thursdays is over, you can pop right over the bridge and come to the Central East Side and hear me bang out from 10 p.m. until 1:30 a.m. at Lulu Bar. Again, great vibes there. Lulu Thursdays is very well known. It's a staple around these parts, so I'm honored to be able to switch it up over there. I've obviously been doing majority Fridays. I've done some Saturdays over there as well, but my first time doing a Thursday, and I am excited about it. So you can pull up to either one of those. Friday, I will be at the Star Pizza from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. playing some good throwback hip-hop for you all there. You can come eat some wonderful food. The pizza is absolutely bomb, and the music is as well, because I'll be there, as I mentioned, Saturday, Mimosa at 11 a.m. until 3 p.m., and then Saturday night, me and my guy Spencer, as you all well know, will be at Fools and Horses. We've been talking about our first Saturday performances at Fools and Horses as of late. I get down on the ones and twos. Spencer gets down on the bass. He does some singing as well. So excited for us to be able to rock out. We'll probably end up doing our rehearsal at Mimosa. Mimosa Thursdays is kind of where, you know, we get to get our shit off and, you know, do a little rehearsing, live rehearsing, obviously, because I'm spinning there for the wine night. But it's real cool because, again, the good people at Mimosa allow us to just kind of do us and do our thing. And obviously, again, it's a live rehearsal. So we come with it. We try to bang out. We get crowd interaction going. We get everybody involved that's in the house. So come out. Check him and I out this weekend at Fools and Horses Saturday night. That'll be at 9 p.m. Until close. I'll say until close because sometimes it's cracking so hard that we stay open a little later than we supposed to. But that's another thing for another day. This weekend, though, 9 p.m., you can catch us there for sure. And then Sunday, I will be back at Bible Club. And I'm excited about it. I'm also a little anxious about it. I'm excited about it because I love Bible Club. I love playing music there. It's the backyard patio. It's in Selwood. My brother and I call Selwood Sel Vallejo because we kick it over there in Selwood hard, you know, so low key over there and just good vibes all the way around. But we kick it in Selwood. We got some good friends over there in Selwood. Obviously, the people at Bible Club, are a part of that. But at the same time, some of you may remember some months back, my good friend Ryan Rollins passed away. And Ryan was the owner of Bible Club. He's also the owner of PDX Sliders. And, you know, this was back in November, late November. And we did a tribute to him either, you know, right around when he passed or early December. We did a tribute to him on this podcast because he was my guy, first and foremost, a really good friend of mine. And, you know, what he meant to the music and the arts community out here, I think, is something that wasn't being discussed enough. And I'm more so talking about the live music scene, especially during the pandemic. The pandemic took away a lot of gigs from a lot of us. And for obvious reasons, you know, the indoor gigs is what you primarily get out here, especially with the weather conditions that we primarily have out here, which is usually cold and rainy. A lot of gigs got taken away at the snap of a finger for a lot of us live DJs and live musicians. And Ryan, having that outdoor patio at Bible Club, was able to keep gigs going there and get a lot of people who lost out on a lot of money, who might have start considering parting away from that craft because they had to figure out other ways to be able to make money during that time period. Ryan was one of the few venues that allowed live music to continue during that time. And it was a game changer for a lot of musicians who, you know, possibly could have been reaching the end of their music careers, but was sort of able to be revived and was able to maintain because of the opportunities presented to them by way of Ryan at the backyard patio. So always going to show mad love to him for that. He's one of the guys that helped me elevate tremendously as a DJ. He lets me do my thing back there. He lets me be free back there. And, you know, I'm excited to just be able to get back this Sunday at 5 p.m. and go rock out. He'll obviously be at the top of my mind as I spin because this is the first time that I'll be DJing at Bible Club since he passed away back in November. So I'm excited to be able to get back. You know what I'm saying? I want to keep his legacy going. I want to, you know, I love being there. I already hang out in the neighborhood over there. Those are my people there. And I would love for any of you to come out and vibe out with us on the patio as well. Good outdoor vibes. But again, you know, I want to keep his legacy going because of what he meant to me and what he meant to the music community out here. And you know, we want to keep his businesses thriving because of that. And that's a very small amount of what he means to this community here in Portland. He was such a generous guy on so many fronts that this is just one of the small ways that I can, you know, be able to kind of give back to him and his legacy that definitely has given to me. So rest in peace again, my boy. Miss you. And I'm excited to get back there and rock out on the backyard patio. That's it for DJing this week. So we'll transition right into some content here. And of course, it'll be one big monologue because Spencer isn't here. And I'll have Zeb chime in when we get to the music. I might have him chime in on another topic as well if we get there. So just be on your toes, Zeb, in that regard. But I want to start off with what I consider to have been the biggest news over the weekend. I know we got NBA playoffs. We'll get to it. But the biggest news to me over the weekend was the retirement of Candace Parker. And for starters, just want to give a huge congratulations to Candace Parker for retiring on retirement. Obviously, many of us know that she will land on her feet as she's already upright on her feet as well, you know, as she was kind of in this transition mode of slowing down when it came to her basketball career and being able to transition into, you know, a broadcast career amongst many other things. And she's already been working with Turner over at TNT. She's been doing a lot of NBA coverage. And of course, again, she was a one of one athlete, a one of one basketball player on the women's circuit at large, not just the WNBA, college, high school, you name it. Candace Parker is nothing short of a legend. And I've been sitting and I've been kind of reflecting on this because, you know, a huge part of why I love women's basketball myself is because of Candace Parker, because, you know, I got to see her career from back at Tennessee all the way up until her retiring just over this weekend. And, you know, we have all of these conversations when it comes to players like her that are just at the top of the game, near the top of the game. And we kind of have these GOAT conversations when it comes to these type of athletes. Obviously, she very well is in a GOAT conversation when it comes to the WNBA and women's basketball, for what it is that she accomplished on the court, winning gold medals, winning WNBA titles, winning a WNBA title for her hometown, winning a couple of national titles in college with Pat Summitt at Tennessee. You know, the accolades are endless for Candace Parker in regard to what she meant to the game itself and what it is that she ultimately produced as a basketball player that would put her in anybody's GOAT conversation. But I don't want to make this about that because I don't want this attention to be taken away from her and her impact and her legacy and ultimately her influence on women's basketball. I believe, and I've been kind of racking my brain around this the last few days, that Candace Parker is indeed the most influential women's basketball player to have ever played the game, ever. And I know some of you are a little bit older and will kind of, you know, probably talk about some of the pillars of the game, you know, some of, you know, the earliest players in the WNBA that was able to get the WNBA off the ground and started. But let's be clear. First and foremost, the WNBA isn't even 30 years old. So it is still a relatively young league, especially in a comparison like the NBA, which is 75 years old. You know what I'm saying? So considering the fact that Candace Parker had a 16-year career and has played in the WNBA for over half of its existence, I think, you know, obviously speaks to the longevity of her career. And some of you may have more recency bias and say, well, what about Caitlin Clark? And what about the boom that has happened in the last couple of years in women's basketball? And I'm glad that we're here. And I'm glad that we're able to acknowledge that amongst a conversation like this. But when you also consider the product that has been when it comes to this era of basketball, this new era that's being ushered in that we've seen at the collegiate level and now early on in some of their double WNBA careers and some of them about to start their WNBA careers and even WNBA vets for that matter. That generation, this new generation of players that have been a part of this huge boom, you talk about the Caitlin Clarks, and I know her GOAT is Maya Moore for obvious reasons as well. And again, that's me getting into a GOAT conversation that I'm going to avoid today because this is all about Candace Parker. But, you know, you had in 2022, Aaliyah Boston absolutely fangirling on stage on the national championship platform when they won the national championship. You know, obviously you got the Angel Reese's and so on and so forth, but this new generation that has been ushered in, the Juju Watkins, the biggest influence I believe on that generation has without a doubt been Candace Parker. First of all, we can talk about on the floor and what she was able to do on the floor and the type of player that Candace was. Candace was absolutely versatile, and she is what a lot of people consider the men's in the NBA game to ultimately be today. She is the epitome of a positionless basketball player. She had the size of a front court player, but had the skills of a guard, and obviously had the athleticism out of this world too. You know, the second player ever to dunk in a WNBA game, the first woman ever to dunk in an NCAA tournament. Like, she did things that nobody could do on the floor, came into the league. A lot of people talk about that WNBA curve, and you even hearing, you know, some of the vets and some of the older women that are talking about Caitlin Clark and expecting her to kind of go through this WNBA curve. That WNBA curve didn't happen for Candace Parker because when she was a rookie, she also won MVP her rookie year. That's crazy to do at any level. Like, that's like a freshman winning player of the year. That's like a rookie, you know, that's like as great as Wimby was. That's like a Wimby or a LeBron winning MVP in their rookie year. That's a crazy thing. But with Candace, ultimately, I just think that this new generation of basketball that we're seeing that has become positionless in a game that kind of had these five traditional positions, I think she's absolutely elevated the game and has laid a blueprint for the wide ranging of skill sets that women can have within this game. And we're seeing it ooze out in players of the likes of like a Juju Watkins. We're seeing it ooze out now. Even the post players, the Aaliyah Bostons, the Aaliyah Edwards, like, they are skilled. They are very skilled, even though, you know, we know them as post players from a more, in a more traditional sense. But Candace Parker, I believe, you know, ushered in a generation that has made an absolute boom within this sport. You know, I look at it from a broadcasting front, and as a broadcaster, she's working for Turner. She's working alongside the likes of, you know, NBA on TNT, the greatest sports show ever created, probably in the world. I definitely would say in North American history when you talk about inside the NBA. You know what I'm saying? And now she's able to do that alongside kind of the other crew with Dwayne Wade and Lefko and everything. But it's like she is laying a blueprint on the broadcasting front as while still having been a player. Obviously, she just retired a couple days ago at the highest of levels that you possibly can. And then you look at the women's broadcast that we had for the women's Final Four of, you know, this past month ago or so, and how great of a broadcast crew that was. And I think Candace Parker, obviously, I talked about Aaliyah Boston, who was the biggest Candace Parker fan out there. Aaliyah Boston is one of the young ladies that was on that phenomenal crew. You know what I'm saying? With Shania Gumake and Andrea Carter and that crew that rocked out for the Women's Final Four this year. So I just want to say that beyond what it was that Candace Parker accomplished on the floor, I think off the floor, she has created the biggest influence and impact when it comes to the boom of the game of women's basketball. Just everything she does all the way around, her marketability, because she's just rock solid on all fronts beyond just being a basketball player, and her willingness to reach back and to embrace these younger players in this younger generation. And again, when you look at the longevity, I look at generations kind of by like decades around that. Maybe you can round up to that, even if it's a few years less than a decade. But I kind of look at generations by decades. And she's been able to not only impact and influence this new generation that's coming onto the horizon now, you know, the Aaliyahs, the Caitlins, the Angels, so on and so forth, Juju. There's still a younger generation than that she will have been able to have so much influence over, because she's been able to last and sustain this long, you know, as a WNBA player, having played 16 years. So I again think that, you know, while all the stuff on the court is great, you know, personally, everything she does is great as a family woman, so on and so forth, I do believe her influence has been unmatched when it comes to the sport of women's basketball, and nobody has influenced the game greater than her. And I think she 100% deserves her roses and flowers for that, which is why we wanted to start with giving her just that here on the Wake Up and Win podcast on this very episode today. So again, congratulations to you. You know, we are all excited to see what's to come, and I know you're going to continue to influence, impact, and give back to the women's basketball game on so many fronts as you impact and affect the men's game and the game at large, regardless of gender. You just have impacted the sport in a way like I've never seen in my lifetime. And I've been around at least long enough to be able to be here while the WNBA existed. Okay. I ain't getting no younger. I ain't old. I'm still a youngster. The WNBA is young as well, but I ain't getting no younger. I've been around this whole time. All right. Born in the early 90s. I was 4 years old when the WNBA came about. So congratulations, Candace, and excited to see what you'll do going forward, and excited to be able to see more of you, you know, front facing in front of that camera from a broadcast front. I think it'll be phenomenal, and what you're going to do on so many other fronts beyond even broadcasting is something that I look forward to seeing. Now we can talk about the NBA, and we are going to start nowhere else than that of the Minnesota Timberwolves, because if y'all out here comparing Anthony Edwards to Michael Jordan, where else would we start? Like, and the comparisons ain't crazy. I'm not being critical of y'all for doing such a thing, but this is Michael Jordan we're talking about, And we're seeing a guy that is showing us glimpses and reminding us of Michael Jordan when he used to play in the NBA and in the postseason. And I think it's well-deserved, all the love and all the credit that Anthony Edwards is getting. I mean, obviously on the floor, he turned on the kill switch and swept the Phoenix Suns, who I'm highly disappointed in for being swept. But I don't want to make this about them either because they got swept. But I'm highly disappointed. And if y'all remember some months back on this podcast, we did like these way too early predictions, which we do every year prior to the NBA season starting. And we predict a team that's going to go out and win a championship. And I predicted the Phoenix Suns. And boy, was I wrong. Boy, was I wrong. But Anthony Edwards is the primary reason why I'm wrong. He absolutely annihilated them in this series. The Timberwolves look really, really good all the way around. I love to see Karl Anthony Towns receive the greatness of Anthony Edwards in this way. I think that's the biggest key to this team. Obviously, you still got Gobert, a defensive player of the year down there. Jaden McDaniels playing great. Obviously, Anthony Edwards looking like the face of the league. But I believe the biggest thing that allowed for sort of this jump into the next level for the Minnesota Timberwolves has been Karl Anthony Towns playing egoless basketball. He's already beyond skilled. He can score on three levels. You know what I mean? He's a big guy. He's a good athlete. He's an all-star caliber player. He's been an all-star. He is an all-star, for crying out loud. But we've seen similar scenarios right here in Portland, Oregon, where you have a guy, a front court guy in particular, who is an all-star, and then you just have this young, shining star that shows up and just begins to elevate and ascend in a way like we've never seen before. And here in Portland, it didn't quite work out the same as it's looking to be working out thus far for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I'm talking about that of LaMarcus Aldridge when he was an all-star here, and Damian Lillard when he came in right away, be one rookie of the year, and just continued to ascend as the years went by. And it got to a point where it's like, all right, whose team is this? Is this Damian Lillard's team, or is it LaMarcus Aldridge's team? And obviously Aldridge had a little bit of a tough time handing the team over to Dame and doing what he needed to help continue to elevate Dame and ultimately elevate the Portland Trailblazers. Instead, you have a not-so-great breakup. And in this case, I think Karl Anthony Towns is taking a little bit more of a, I don't want to use the word mature, but I think he's taking a little bit more of an effective route by saying, you know what, I'll play second fiddle to Anthony Edwards. He's calling Anthony Edwards the face of the league. He's allowing Anthony Edwards even to be a vocal leader out there, and he's receiving it. It's not a clash there, which we've heard so many stories of clashes of guys, again, who are star players. Gave you an example right here in Rip City. I think this Timberwolves team is a problem, and Denver, y'all hands are full with this young squad. And Anthony Edwards, again, showing his greatness. And I love to see it because I talked about it on radio this morning. I was on Rip City Radio, as I am every Tuesday at 8 a.m. with my guy Justin Myers, Rip City 620, if you're here in Portland, or on the iHeartRadio app. The show is called Rip City Mornings. And Justin actually brought up a conversation that he and I had like three or more years ago on this podcast about young Anthony Edwards. And I was fixated on the fact that I believed he was going to become the face of the league. And this is when you got, you know, Zion Williamson. You obviously had LaMelo Ball, Ja Morant, so on and so forth. And I told Justin, I said, Anthony Edwards is that guy. And Anthony Edwards was just also a guy that I kind of understood. And what I mean by that is his lack of political correctness coming into the league and just like saying the right things or seeming to come off as media trained or media savvy, it just wasn't quite there. I mean, you know, he was questioning if he even wanted to play the sport of basketball at all. You know, he obviously, you know, just kind of said things that some people took to be as a little bit off the wall, and who has sort of reminded me of, who, you know, I grew up around being in the Bay Area. I've done like an in-depth report on this athlete as well. He kind of reminded me of a Marshawn Lynch, where Beast Mode was a guy who did not care about impressing the media, did not care about saying the politically correct thing, and just kind of went off how he felt when it came to his reactions to questions that were thrown his way. But that doesn't mean those guys don't have a kill switch. And Anthony Edwards has proven to have an absolute kill switch in the way that he sent Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns home in that game four. And obviously the way he played that entire series and this entire season, he's been an MVP caliber player all year long. But, and then you heard it, he said it in a presser. He said, "I want to kill everybody that's in front of me. That's it. That is my mission. That is my goal." And it reminded me kind of when Marshawn Lynch did the interview and said, "You want to punch an MF in the face over and over and over and over again." And the mentality of those two guys to me is kind of the same. And all they ever needed was a little bit of motivation. And with age, with growth, with experience, that motivation is going to come. And let me tell you, I know for a fact, this is the journalist coming out in me right now, I know for a fact, Anthony Edwards has been keeping receipts about all the stuff that folks were saying about him over the years, and he's now here to let it be known on the floor, and he'll let it be known off the floor about the receipts that are being kept. I know that for a fact. He's been keeping receipts. He might not be talking about the receipts so much right now, but let me tell you, let this continue, and you might see exactly what I'm talking about. And as of right now, it looks like he's on a damn warpath. So shout out to him. His shoes are flying off the shelves over there at Adidas. He's just doing everything, and he's looking and acting the part of what the face of the league would look like. And you know, we talk about the marketability and the branding side. And again, he's getting Jordan comparisons, and we know with those tennis shoes and how much that meant to the overall brand of Michael Jordan and why we revere him in the way that we do. And I got word, them Anthony Edwards, them AE1s that's out right now, they're flying off the shelves. They don't last online for 20 minutes is the word that I got around here. So they hard to get right now, kind of like them Jays used to be hard to get. And again, it's starting off with what Anthony Edwards is doing on that hardwood, because he is absolutely killing. So congratulations to him. And then ultimately, I just want to kind of stick with this changing of the guard that's ultimately happening in the league, because you got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the young boys over there in OKC who handily swept the New Orleans Pelicans. And that team is a problem. Obviously, again, a very young team. You know, they got SGA, who is just a phenom of a point guard, a phenom of a basketball player for that matter. And I got to see him this year. And, you know, I tell people all the time, because, you know, I go to a lot of games, I said, the best player that I think I saw with my own two eyes this season was Luka Doncic. I said it here recently, not too long ago. And then I said, the second best player that I saw with my own two eyes this season was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And it wasn't that big of a separation. Luka was just, oh my gosh, incredible. And Luka is Luka. So you get what I'm saying when I mean that. That shouldn't sound like an outrageous take or a statement to say, but my goodness, when you see it for yourself, it's even more than what you see and what you watch him do on television. But SGA was a close second. And I believe Shai Gilgeous-Alexander should be the MVP of the league this year. They're the number one seed. He's absolutely killed it. You know, they got the coach of the year over there as well. Shout out to the G League. Mark winning coach of the year over there. And, you know, he was a former G League coach. Always got to weave that in with my G League ties, of course. And, you know, I just think, you know, what they did over there to the Pelicans was what they were supposed to do. Then you look at another sweep, you know, when you look at the Denver Nuggets, who obviously the defending champions and a team that's still relatively young. They got a young core still, and they can do this for quite some time based on, you know, the years that they have left in those legs over there, as long as, you know, they can stay healthy and whatnot. But they sweep the Los Angeles Lakers. And I was a guy who came on this podcast and was talking about just a month or so ago, looking at sort of the teams that were in the race in the bottom half of the Western Conference for the last couple of playoff spots and obviously the play-in spots. And I'm like, yo, this bottom half of those top 10 teams look stronger than the top half of those top 10 teams. And I have been proven absolutely wrong in that. And I receive it. I accept it. You know, I can acknowledge my bias when it comes to players of the likes of Steph Curry and LeBron James and Kevin Durant, because what I've seen them do historically within the game of basketball, especially when it comes to making deep playoff runs and being hard to knock out in the postseason. I've gotten to witness that for such a long time that I wanted this young group to prove it. And here in the postseason is kind of their way of doing that. Obviously, they showed us a very nice sample size over the course of 82 games by being able to be those top three seeds. But now, prove it, you know what I'm saying, here in the postseason. And that doesn't so much, you know, I don't mean that so much for the Denver Nuggets, who's the defending champions. But, yeah, the OKC Thunder, y'all young. Minnesota Timberwolves, y'all never been out of the first round. Go prove it. Well, damn it, they did. And now I'm willing to say it's a changing of the guard happening in the league, and I'm excited about it. And then, obviously, you look at the Eastern Conference, a young Indiana Pacers team who is playing against the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, granted, the Milwaukee Bucks ain't healthy, but that ain't nothing for the Pacers to apologize for. They're handling business. They're up 3-1 in that series. You look at the Knicks up 3-1 over the 76ers like this. And, you know, and this is, you know, the Bucks obviously with Dame and Giannis and Middleton. But Giannis hasn't played this series. Dame ends up getting hurt, you know, in that game three. Didn't play game four. And Middleton obviously is just out there trying to make it happen by himself, but it ain't quite enough because these young Bulls is running and gunning. It's the number one scoring team in all of the NBA and the Pacers. But my goodness, Jalen Brunson and the New York Knicks taking it to Embiid and them over there in Philly. And it ain't just on the floor, it's in the stands too. Damn it. Them New York Knicks fans, they put Philly to shame at home. At home during the playoffs, put him to shame, caught the train and put him to shame because it sounded like they were playing at Madison Square Garden in games 3 and 4, but they weren't. And again, you know, across the board, the organization is doing well. Brunson is getting off. And then I got to give it up to a young Orlando Magic team. Again, a changing of the guard who I thought was going to get swept when they went down 0-2 to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they were able to come back home and turn that thing around. And now that series tied at 2-2, and we'll see how it goes from here. The Cavaliers and the Magic are actually playing right now. Game 5 back in Cleveland. Cleveland up 16-9. We'll see how that game ends up playing out, but still a lot of credit to the Magic for fighting, you know what I mean? And not going out sad, ultimately, and now having made this a series. But again, all of these young teams, man, look so good. And then obviously there's the Boston Celtics, you know, self-explanatory. Ultimately, I say all of this to say there's a changing of the guard happening in the NBA. I'm here for it, and you should probably be here for it too, because ain't nothing changing no time soon in that regard. But I also do want to acknowledge Rip City and the Portland Trailblazers in all of this. And the reason why I want to do that, because to me, in the seat I sit in, and some of you may call me biased because I sit in a seat that happens to be employed by that of the Portland Trailblazers as the TV analyst for the Rip City Remix. So I acknowledge that. I'm here to acknowledge it. But what I will say, when you look at the trajectory of the NBA and you acknowledge and you see what's happening in the playoffs right now, and you acknowledge this changing of the guard and sort of this young wave of teams kind of just taking over and ascending to the top of the league. And you look at the Portland Trailblazers, and we're in this rebuild phase, if you will. You're a really young team that, you know, is trying to give ourselves a little bit of time to get it together and pull it together. Just drafted a young point guard at number 3 overall, you know, last year in Scoot. You got DeAndre Ayton, who played well. You got some rookies getting shine. The Blazers are young. They're in a rebuild phase. There is something that I think should be a little bit encouraging, seeing this changing of the guard and seeing these younger teams have success, because it should feel within reach for us here. it should feel within reach. Obviously, things got to happen, and everybody got jobs to do. You know what I'm saying? All the way around. Things got to happen, and everybody has jobs to do. But knowing that we're in the stage that we're in now and seeing kind of where things are going and new teams coming to the forefront of the NBA and kind of, you know, we're out of this super team era. We're even kind of out of, like, there's some big threes that exist, but we're out of the big three era. And it's really about, you know, constructing really good teams top to bottom together to be able to win. You know, the game is kind of changing as it evolves by nature. And you're seeing these young teams thrive and have all of this success. If I'm a Rip City Portland Trailblazer fan, I would be excited about that. And I'm not going to lie to you. What should make you a little bit more excited about that, again, is seeing the Phoenix Suns get swept. Because quite frankly, not only did they get swept by a young team, they had a lot of dudes that were here in Portland that are now on that team, and they didn't elevate enough to even be able to win a playoff game over there in Phoenix with star power like Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal. And we was trying to figure out what they could do alongside just Damian Lillard. I mean, this is no knock. This is no diss. This is the reality of the situation right now. And obviously, you know, Dame is on his way now, and he's with Milwaukee. And, you know, unfortunately, they're dealing with a lot of health issues here in this postseason, but still a contending team when healthy in the NBA. And so, you know, that'll be what it's going to be, and he'll have his chance to be able to potentially win a championship. But when you think about that trade that happened, and you think about a lot of the players that went from the Portland Trailblazers to the Phoenix Suns that used to be the supporting cast of Damian Lillard, and now they're the supporting cast of KD, Book, and Beal, and they couldn't even win a playoff game. I think you should be happy and trending in a direction of being a young team in the NBA while the young teams are thriving. I just think that's where you should stand right now. So for me, I don't mind the place that we're in right now in Rip City. You obviously want to win games, but I don't see that being that far away if things go the way that they're supposed to go and we follow the trend of what's actually happening in the NBA right now. So got to put that out there. But now, Zeb, you ready to holla?
Yes, sir.
Because the rap wars continue. Kendrick Lamar woke us up this morning and dropped a diss called Euphoria. And let me tell you, call me West Coast bias, call me whatever you want to call me, but he took it to Drake, Zeb. He took it to him.
Yeah, he really gave it to him, didn't he?
He took it to him. I mean, and here's the thing. Like, you know, we talked about, we had the war games, the technological war games episode here recently on this podcast, and we obviously talked about this rap beef and you know, Drake using AI and using the Tupac AI and the Snoop Dogg AI and the beef that, I mean, in the record, one of the records that he made, dissing Kendrick Lamar. But when you're dealing with a guy like Kendrick, you can't run away from being an MC. And while all the techie shit was cool, you still got to deal with the response coming from one of the illest MCs to ever do it. That is Kendrick Lamar. And from what I've taken away from the Like That verse, and even from this Euphoria diss that came out this morning, Drake might be winning the petty games, but Kendrick is winning in the MC realm. What do you think about that, Zeb?
Yeah, no question. I mean, Drake's a hell of an entertainer.
Yeah.
But Kendrick is just he's technically, as a rapper, he's one of the best of all time.
Yeah.
His bars and his verses are just so much more than the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
There's intricacies, there's meaning to every word and every space. He's just such a technician. Like, you can't up somebody like Drake with his whole room of writers, can't stand up to him as an MC. It just isn't going to work.
And I think you are exactly right. Drake, I mean, Kendrick, didn't waste a bar in this diss. Whether you like the bars or not is, you know, it's subjective. That's music. That's hip hop. But he didn't waste any. And that was very clear. And he spoke with substance in that record. But then also, like, you know, you talk about the technician and a technician of being an MC in the bars, but also the cadences. He did three beat switches and floated. You know what I'm saying? Like the cadences, you think of the cadences of, you know, give me one of the greatest old school MCs of your era.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I don't know. I take this for what it's worth, but I'm reading allegedly there's a 19-minute version of this.
Wow.
That exists, which I imagine is probably multiple songs.
So yeah, he's gonna break
together.
This down.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, he's gonna break this all the way down. There's more to come. And let me tell you, if I had to have a critique of the diss, I thought the beginning was just great. It was clever. It was creative. I thought the dullest part of the diss was that second beat. Like I said, he did three beats. So in the beginning, I think he just came in and like. It was an attention grabber, you know, the cadence, the kind of melodic element to it. But obviously also, again, he doesn't waste the bar. He's a technician with the bars. So the stuff that he was saying was clever as well. I think it got a little bit dull, if you will, in the middle. I received it. The bar, it wasn't weak. It wasn't mid, as some of y'all would say. But I just think in comparison to the beginning and the end, like if I had to have a critique, that middle part, that second beat, if you will, probably was the worst of the three. And then he closed it out with the bang. He built it back up again. And based on the way he ended that record, if it's 20 more minutes of that, Drake can forget about it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Drake can forget about it. You know what I'm saying? And so now again, I love this for the sport of hip hop. I'm not knocking Drake here. I love Drake's engagement in all of this. And I do think that we should also pay close attention to what Drake is doing, because Drake is going to take the more modern approach, if you will. Drake is going to, again, use the AI. Drake is going to create in a way that can relate to, I guess, his demo, if you will, because Kendrick and Drake's fan bases are nowhere near the same when it comes to the demo of their fan bases that supports them. Drake more so appeals to the youth, and again, Kendrick more so appeals to the MCs, and, you know, they obviously both have some pretty diverse fan bases as well from a racial standpoint, but I think, you know, just Kendrick appeals more to the traditional NC. Drake appeals more to, you know, the present day current wave of what's happening, what's going on right now. And I think Drake's ability to reinvent himself in that way from genre to genre, from era to era now, because he's been doing it for such a long time, I think is a superpower of his. It's no knock, but you're dealing with an MC right now, Drizzy. And Kendrick is going to put you in a position where you're going to have to bar up. And that's ultimately what it's come, what it comes down to. And good luck. You know what I'm saying? Good luck. But what do you think about this for like hip hop as a whole, Zeb? And you've been in the game for, I don't know, Zeb, obviously he's back here, you know, engineering this, this podcast here, but this is like a music studio that we're in right now. Zeb done been producing and engineering and mixing and mastering for decades. And so I love to be able to bring Zeb in, and somebody who I know has been a student of this music shit, this hip hop shit in particular. You know, what do you feel about this particular beef right now and where hip hop stands? You know, obviously using the context of all it is that you've seen, experienced, and witnessed within what I like to call the sport of hip hop.
Yeah, I mean, every time there's a large scale hip hop beef, and I don't know if there's ever been one larger as far as, you know, the top personalities, the top artists in the game. This might be as big as it's gotten and as widespread as it is. But every time there is a large beef like this, it kind of revitalizes hip hop as a culture in the mainstream. It's always, anytime you can challenge these rappers to do their best as a rapper and not, you know, everybody can make a catchy hook or whatever, a catchy song. But when you push them to really be at the top of their pen game, that's when hip hop is at its best, in my opinion.
I like that. I think that's also interesting that this might be the biggest rap beef ever in hip hop, even bigger than Pac and Biggie.
I mean, that's that'll go down in history as the biggest one for sure. But like when you're looking at who's getting radio play, who's selling records.
Yeah.
I mean, this, it doesn't get much bigger than Kendrick, Drake, J. Cole. You know what I mean?
Like, for sure. Huge. No, I hear you. I thought it was an interesting point you made there, because I hadn't thought about it in that way, but yeah, Drake's doing Michael Jackson numbers, for crying out loud. He talks about it on the records. Kendrick is out here winning Pulitzer Prizes, for crying out loud. None of those other guys that have been in rap beefs have done that, not for an album. You know, maybe for something else. I don't know off the top of my head, but it's, I know for a fact it's never happened for an album, a hip-hop album. So yeah, I tend to actually agree with you that this might be the pinnacle in terms of, you know, the tier and how big the particular artists are that are in the beef that we've ever seen within hip hop. And again, hip hop's only 50. You know what I'm saying? Like, it ain't that old for that to be a crazy statement to make. But nah, man, I think it's been dope for hip hop. I can't wait to hear Drake's response. I think this is gonna last all summer. You know, I think, you know, they're both doing numbers and getting engagement off of it. And like you said, why wouldn't you want to be able to not only be pushed as an MC to deliver your best, but also make the numbers while doing that? That literally should be what this is all about.
Yeah, and, I mean, as long as it stays on record.
For sure, keep it for going. Sure. For sure. Yeah, keep it on wax. Keep it on wax. You don't got to take it to the street, which it's hard for me to imagine that this beef will get taken to the streets. You know, so I still have a tough time imagining that. But as far as the penmanship, the rapping, the releasing, and the numbers and the engagement that this all is ultimately going to get, especially for Kendrick, in Kendrick's case, you know, no longer signed to Top Dog. He's got his own thing going on with PG Lang and Drake. You know, he's clearly in these disses talking about these splits that he getting that everybody else ain't getting. So it would behoove him to keep doing these crazy numbers as well, because he's getting all the favorable parts of the splits. If he's rapping and saying this about everybody else splits in a diss song, that's must be what's happening. Wouldn't become as a surprise to me, because it's Drake. So I think, you know, it's a good thing for hip hop all the way around. And I'm gonna continue to follow it. But West Side, baby. Kendrick's in the lead. And on that note, we are going to leave y'all the only way that we know how, and that is to stay woke and go win.